from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington, you're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
All right, we'll go ahead and begin. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here. For those who don't know me, I'm Andrew Brassage. I'm the Judd Regis Chair of Accounting. And this chair was founded by Dan and Cecilia Regis on the ideals of faith, family, and freedom. And it's given us some resources and some flexibility to talk about some cool stuff, explore some cool things that are aligned with mission. Today, as part of our Regis Executive Speaker Series, we welcome Sam Mascareno to campus. Sam is a partner and the enterprise market leader at the accounting and consulting firm RSM. In this role, Sam oversees the execution of the firm's growth and culture objectives in the U.S. and Canada. He's also a member of the firm's executive leadership team. And on the weekends, Sam is a pastor at the 1,000-plus member Lighthouse Church in San Diego, go Padres, which he founded with his wife, Angie, in 1999. Please join me in welcoming to the School of Business, Sam Mascareno.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It is morning. I know it's a little cold, but I'm from San Diego. Trust me, this is cold. Good to be with you this morning. Excited to share a bit about this topic that on the surface seems a little interesting. How do these concepts come together? Is it more than theory? Can it happen? And so excited to share some things with you. Before I do that, thank you for the opportunity to be here. I want to recognize some of my partners that are here from the area. Paul Brassage here, who's part of the board for the school and a partner at our firm. We have Brenda right here, Brenda Croft, who leads our Northwest market. So all of this area. Lenore Grollinger, who's the audit leader for this area. And JJ Merlino, who is an alum of Gonzaga and one of our newest partners in the firm in the consulting area. So thank you all for being here. And thank you all for being here this morning. As we think about this topic, and as Andrew mentioned, there is a bit of two hats that I wear in my life, and very cool when they get to come together and we can talk about them. So as he mentioned, currently serve as the enterprise market leader for our firm. And in that role, I oversee the growth and the culture for our 92 offices across the US and Canada, based out of San Diego, part of the executive team of our firm. So very blessed to be in a position to speak into strategic decisions. And as you can imagine, as the world changes and the business world evolves, how do we position our firm for future success? And so very excited about the strategic side of what I get to do today. On the other hand, I also pastor a church. So my wife and I started this church 25 years ago this November. And those two have sort of coexisted over the last 25 years in a very interesting way, and learned some lessons along the way. So I want to share some of that with you today. So as I think about what it is that on the surface we think about, when you think of faith, when you think of business, a lot of folks would think that, so that's me with shorter hair, but it's not from too long ago, so that's good. So on the surface, you think about business and what business is, what business does, what business is about. And I think in a very simplistic way, a lot of folks say, well, no, when you think about business, business is really all about the bottom line. How you get there, you want to be profitable, you want to make sure you have a good product, a good service, you can get a good return for the owners or for the folks that are responsible for the organization. So it's really all about the bottom line. And you know, the end justify the means. And it's really about, for lack of a better term, greedy capitalism. It's all about making the most money, and you know, whatever, however you get there, whoever is helped or hurt in the process, it's just part of how things work. So there could be a very myopic way to see business as very cold, very transactional, and just about the outcome. On the other hand, you could almost equally think of faith as really being all about spiritual things and all about eternal outcomes, in such a way that what happens day to day in the world should not be as important. We shouldn't be as concerned. We shouldn't be as engaged. We shouldn't be as worried about anything that happens here, because if we really are people of faith, then the eternal and the divine is more important, and we shouldn't waste our time being engaged in the world around us. And so
the question really becomes, is there a way where a healthy convergence can happen? Can do these two seemingly opposite things come together? And as you think about where you are in life as young folks and thinking and figuring out your path and your future and your goals and how do I get there and what will it take to be successful in my field? How do I garner all the information, the teaching to be able to become successful, whichever way you define it today? And is there a place for faith somewhere in that? And I would tell you that in my own life, that was a question I had since I was a little kid. And so just as a bit a way of background, my journey is a bit unorthodox as to kind of how I got to here. But it really started, my father was a pastor in Mexico. So he was a pastor in Mexico. I'm the baby of 10 kids. So you can imagine being the baby of 10. There's benefits to that. And there's also some challenges with that. Like I never had anything new. My baseball glove was like fourth generation. My skateboard was like fifth generation. My jeans were not new. Like everything was passed down from brother to brother to brother to get to number 10. And as much as I'm the baby, you know, there's some things that were not cool about being number 10. Because, for example, my mom and dad and 9 of my siblings play the piano. My mom and dad and 9 play the piano. When you get to number 10, sometimes, I don't know if the DNA just kind of dilutes or what happens. So being number 10 was not always fun. And growing up in Mexico, there's a thought that if you are in ministry, that you're supposed to suffer. And so that was kind of part of my growing up. My parents were very modest means, and because they had 10 kids, as you can imagine, it was a bit rough. So it was great to be raised in a faith-filled home. It was great to have those principles and those morals and those examples and role models. But I saw how difficult it was to really kind of be involved in ministry and mission, that it made me realize, okay, this is good, but I never want to do that. Like, faith is not part of my success formula. I thought that doesn't, those can't coexist. So that was a bit of the growing up part. And so my father retired from being a pastor in Mexico when I was 16 years old. And at 16, we moved to San Diego. And I came to San Diego, didn't speak a word of English, didn't understand how this country worked. English doesn't make sense. Sorry if you're an English major. But like vowels having like 10 different sounds and letters and words that are spelled right, but they don't say anything or do anything. It was really hard to understand and to learn English, being that, you know, that was not my first language. And so we came here and finished high school. And because I didn't speak very good English, no one told me like how college worked. Like, did you apply? Or so I graduated high school. My dad's like, what are you going to do? I said, well, I want to go to college. I said, well, how do you do that? I said, I don't know. And I didn't realize you have to apply like the semester before and all of that. So like no one told me anything. So the only option was to go to community college and start there and figure my way. So eventually I decided, you know what, I'm going to go to business school. And so I went to San Diego State University and as an accounting major. And I said, you know, I always felt like this calling towards mission and helping people and being involved in some way with my faith. But I just felt it would be incompatible with the kind of life I wanted. And so I said, you know, I want a better life, quote unquote. And so I decided to go to business school. And I realized in business school that God is sort of stubborn when it comes to that desire to help, that desire to bless other people, to share with others, to fulfill a mission beyond yourself. And so I'm in graduate school getting a master's in tax. And during that time, I really kind of felt this coming back to me. I was like, you really need to do something with this side. The faith side is being neglected. And you need to incorporate that into your life. And so in my own way, it's going to sound weird, but I made an agreement with God. I said, okay, fine. If you want me to do something around mission, if you want me to help people, if this is something that I can do, then if you help me to have a successful career in business, then I'll do this for free. I'll do this on the side. I'll help people. I'll be involved in my church and help people out. But I don't want this to be my life. And so that was kind of the agreement that happened. And you got to be careful what you pray for, because sometimes like it happens. Like sometimes like you say, huh, maybe he did hear that. And I really felt that he heard that. And so I was finishing, I was in graduate school in the daytime, going to, in our church, our Bible school or seminary at night, and finished that process. And I started helping out our church. Our church was a very small, all Spanish church in San Diego, in one of the worst neighborhoods in San Diego. And so I began teaching a Bible study in English, primarily for youth, because the parents spoke Spanish, but the kids spoke English. And so the church was all Spanish, and the kids like didn't want to go to church because they couldn't understand a word anymore. And so I said, well, I'll talk to the kids. So I started having a class, a Bible study with kids, and it started growing. And by then, I had graduated from getting my master's in tax. I began to work at a large Big Four firm, and I was being very successful. So I felt like, you know, this deal's working, like this agreement's working out. I finished school. I got hired by a Big Four firm. I'm progressing well. I'm doing this Bible study stuff. It's like maybe this can work. 5 years later, I become a manager in this firm, and everything's going great. And they tell me, you know, if you really want to continue your progression to become a partner one day, you ought to move to Miami, because that's where our international tax practice base is based out of. And so I said, well, that sounds great. I just got married. So I told my wife, what do you think about Miami? You know, Miami, not horrible, right? So I'm like, okay, that sounds good. So I went to tell my pastor, hey, just so you know, this is what I'm planning to do. He goes, no, you're not going to do that. I'm like, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you, this is what I want to do, because that's like the next logical step for me to advance in my career. He's like, no, you're not going to do that. I said, yeah, I am going to do that. He goes, no, you're not. I said, well, what do you think I'm going to do? He goes, I think you're going to stay in San Diego. And I think you're going to take this little Bible study and actually form a church and lead it and be a pastor. I'm like, oh, no, I've been running from that for a long time. So, no, I want to be a partner. And he goes, no, you're going to stay and do this. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I go home mad. Like, who's he to tell me what to do? Can't sleep. A couple of days go by. And I went back to the pastor. So tell me about this. Do you think this can work? So in 1999, we started this church with a small group in a cafeteria of an elementary school. I'm a manager in this big firm. And, you know, we get going. And then within that first year, the partner that I worked for found out that I started this church. And he pulled me into his office. He goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm doing this. He goes, well, why are you doing that? I said, well, that's faith is important to me. And he goes, look, either you're going to be a partner or you're going to be a pastor. You can't do both. So this is a great time for you to shut that down, wind it down. You just started, so easier to kill it now. And let me know, show me that you're committed to your career. And I said, well, I think I could do both, because I had this deal, you know. And he goes, no, I need you all here. And so either you quit that or just know there's going to be a ceiling for you in this career. You're not going to get farther than where you're at right now. And it was like a faith crisis moment. Like, man, I thought we had a deal. Like, I thought we were on the same page here. And didn't know what to do. Had a friend that had gone to work for RSM. That a firm that I'm with now, he goes, you should come talk to us. And I said, who are you? Like, I never heard of this firm. He goes, come talk to us. So I go meet with the partner in charge of the San Diego office at the time. He's since retired. And I said, look, here's my resume and all that. Everything's good. I said, look, there's something that's not on the resume that's important to me. And if it's going to be a problem, then I don't want to waste your time and I don't want to waste mine. So what's not on the resume is that I just started a church and that's important to me. And so if that's a deal breaker, like let's finish right now. And he goes, okay, we're finished. And he closed his binder. And I was like, man, what a jerk. Like he didn't even give me a chance to like talk. He goes, we're done. I said, well, what do you mean we're done? He's like, well, if you're doing that, that means you care about people. That means you have values. That means you have principles. And we want people like you here. When do you want to start? How much do you want to get paid? And all of a sudden, the heavens opened. No, they didn't. It was just that moment, like, wow. Like, you know, you have these little crisis moments sometimes in faith. And you're like, is this real? Is this happening? Is this for real? And that was 2001, which is really scary because mostly we're not even born at that time. And so from that point on, the opportunities I've had in our firm since then, became a partner in our firm 16 years ago, led the San Diego office for a couple of years. Then I was asked to lead the tax practice in the West region. Then I was asked to lead the West region for the firm. And as of last year, now overseeing all the markets in the US and Canada. So the progression has been pretty amazing in the firm. While at the same time, that small little Bible study of a few people in a cafeteria has grown to a two-campus church with over 1,500 members, of 18 pastors in our church, and I work full-time. And so the only way church can happen, ministry can happen, is to delegate and to empower and to have a lot of people. What's kind of unique about our church is that all of us work full-time elsewhere. None of us are employed by the church. We all do this for free. And so it was a bit of the model that went back to those days of making that deal with God that if you help me have a career in business, I'll do this for free as long as you give me strength to do both. And that's been the journey for the last 25 years. It's set fast, but 25 years is a long time for that journey. And so along the way, you know, what I've learned is that faith, being a person of faith, can provide you as a professional with the motivation, can provide you with the inspiration, with the guidance to make, I would say, difficult business decisions and to take some tough actions, including that challenge in the back of your mind to always make sure, even in business, that you always have a deeper purpose in mind. That it's not just about the metrics. That it's not just about the result. That it's not just about the bottom line. But that there's a deeper purpose as to why we do what we do. And that we do it in a way that's aligned with truly helping people get to a better place in their lives. So there's I found that faith really informs and helps your career in business. By the same token, on the other side, I've also learned that having business knowledge, being a CPA, learning how business operates, can really provide, I would say, a framework, a strategic mindset to mission and to faith, the accountability, the metrics, to see if what you're doing is actually working out, being successful, how to measure, how to maximize the impact of our faith in our life. So on the one hand, being a pastor, I'm convinced, has helped me to be a better partner. And being a partner has helped me to be a better pastor. And so somehow how one helps the other, how one propels the other has been a really interesting thing to watch because, again, that was the initial question. Can these two worlds interact? Can they coexist? And how does one help the other? So let me just share really quick three key lessons I've learned that I hope would be helpful for you as you ponder your future, as I maybe challenge what your definition of success is. And how faith can inform and help shape some of those outcomes. So the first thing that I want to share with you is really understanding what business success is. If I was to ask you, what does it mean to be successful? If you are an accounting major or a finance major, whatever your major is, obviously all of you are here because you see a bright future for yourself. You want to create a great future for you. I remember when I was in high school, when I first moved here, that it was really hard to read textbooks in English. And so I would have like U.S. history open and I had a Spanish-English dictionary and like every other word I had to look up. It would take me hours to read like a page or two because I didn't know what the words meant. And I would get frustrated. And I was mad because in Mexico, I was cool. You know, in Mexico, like I knew how it worked. And here, I'm not understanding this. And some of those moments where you're like, just like tired, want to give up, frustrated. I would say to myself, you know, what I'm doing right now is going to make a difference as to whether I can buy my kids Nikes. Nikes were really cool back then. They still kind of are. This is pre-Jordan days. But I was like, yeah, and it was a weird thing to think. But it sort of gave me a little bit of fuel to say, you know, it's not just about now. It's not just about me. I knew what it was like to grow up not having Nikes, and I wanted my kids to have Nikes. And so it was a weird thing to me. Success was that. And so it propelled me to keep going. And so as you think about business and what your definition of success is, here's what I found that is sort of the recipe for success. On the one hand, you know, if you see this tree, on the one hand, what people can see and what most people characterize as success are the things you can see. It's really about your competence, how good you are at what you do, being really good at what you do, working hard at what you do, providing a service, offering a product, doing something in a way that's unique, that's valuable, that consumers, customers, clients value and are willing to pay you for. So the competence is what's viewed, that's what's seen, that's what the spreadsheets show, that's what the financial statements would reflect. So competence is really your skill set, being good at your craft, being good at what you do. That's sort of the part you see. But underneath that, there's a root system in a tree. And I would call that's a character. That's really who you are. And what I've learned and what I've seen time and time again in my life and in the hundreds, maybe even thousands of clients that I've dealt with over the last 30 years of my career is that growth is heavy. Success is heavy. And if you're not careful and you're all about the success on top, but if you don't work on your infrastructure that supports that growth, you can become a victim of your own success. In other words, your growth, if your growth outgrows your character, your infrastructure, then you'll collapse. And we see this all the time. We see great companies that fail. We see amazing professionals that fail. They collapse under the weight of their own success because all the emphasis was on the top and not enough on the bottom. What is the character? Who are you? It's beyond what you do and how good you are at what you do, is who are you on the inside? Well, what's your infrastructure? And I would equate this almost to like a old school wooden roller coaster. The higher you go, the more infrastructure you need to support that growth because it's heavy. And so one of the things that I love about your school and your mission is that it's not just about the tree on top. It's also taking moments like today to think about what's underneath. Who are you underneath? What supports you? And are you able to sustain the growth you imagine? Do you have the strength inside of you to actually carry the weight of success? Because success is heavy. Success can get to your head. Success can make you cruel. Success can make you a jerk. Do you have the infrastructure underneath? Do you have the character to support that? And I find that the challenges you receive at places like Gonzaga, that not only, I love the mission around the whole person, not just the technical skill. It's not just understanding the important aspects of your major or your profession. It's also challenging us to think, what would happen if you have the success you imagine? Would you be able to handle it? Would you be able to sustain that? And would it be able to feed you? So number one, understand and incorporate into your definition of success, not just the top, but also the foundation. Because I have found as a person of faith, in difficult times, character has sustained me. In difficult times, character has made decisions that are typically hard easier because you have something that you understand where it comes from. So understanding and defining success as both of these components, I think would be helpful for you as you think about what your future might look like and what you need to do now to prepare for that. I would tell you, if you wait until you're successful to think about developing your character, you're late. If you really, can I just ask a show of hands? How many of you envision you being successful 10 years from now? What should you be doing now for the foundation so that success won't crush you? What should you be doing now to equally build? So you're in a great university. You're being taught by great professors and you're getting taught things that will help you in your technical development, but it's kind of up to you to find the time to also develop what's on the inside, the infrastructure that will support the growth that you envision down the road. So one first lesson is understand success holistically, not just what you see, but also what sustains it. Second thing that I've learned over the years is sort of the concept of servant leadership. And this has become hugely important, especially as I got into leadership roles. When I had people under my supervision that sort of dependent on me. I remember when I first made partner in the firm 16 years ago, and I remember walking into the office and it just felt different. It felt different. I owned this firm. And I walked in, I saw, you know, all these people working here. They have mortgages, they have car payments, they have obligations, they have student debt they're paying off. And it was no longer about, I want to be successful. It's like, I want to be successful for them. I want them to be able to progress in their career. I want them to be able to afford the things. They're buying their first home, you know, they're buying a new car. And so I need to sell, I need to provide, I need to grow the firm. I felt a responsibility. And it was really not about, I want to get to the next level. It's like, I want to help my team, these awesome folks, these young professionals, reach their goals. And so some key attributes of servant leadership that are very much informed by the faith foundation that you have here. Let me just go through a list of things that I think are very valuable. Servant leadership is really about understanding that the mission comes first. It's about the mission more than it is about you. It's about that being successful. It's very against our selfish nature, because let's face it, we're all selfish by nature, right? What's one of the first words kids learn to say? Oftentimes before mom or dad, the word's mine. Right? Who teaches a little kid to say mine? And they say it with attitude, right? I have twin daughters and I remember. they like to share when it was the other twin giving her something, not when they need to give the twin something, right? And mine, and there's something about the way we're wired. Maybe it's our fallen nature in a way that is very selfish. And so making it about the mission more so than yourself, being committed to that mission becomes important. And again, that's one of the things I appreciate about Gonzaga, is that the school has a mission beyond just the academics. It's broader, it's bigger than that. And so accomplishing the mission comes first and always. Secondly, is understanding how the importance of mastering your role is in support of the mission, not just for your advancement, not just for your progression, but how does you becoming better help the mission accomplish its goal? So it's really, again, keeping it in that mindset. This one's hard, by placing the needs and interests of others before your own. This is hard. I would tell you, sometimes in the short term, it feels like you're losing. Because you could see other folks that are all about them, they progress faster. But I'm telling you, this is a marathon, not a sprint. And I have found that when you can honestly, sincerely place the needs and interests of others before your own in the long term, it always pays off. But again, that's a servant leadership mindset that's sort of against conventional wisdom. Fostering a culture of teamwork and trust, really working together. Let's all advance. Let's all rise up together, as opposed to being cutthroat. And I tell you, sometimes in business, it can be very cutthroat. It can be very much like, you know what? If I have to tear you down to get myself up, I'll do that. And that happens, unfortunately. But I have found that when you foster a culture of teamwork and trust, you go faster. Any group I've led, any team I've led, any leadership role I've had, one of the first things I try to do is do this. Let's create a culture. Let's create an environment where it's about a team. It's about trusting one another. It's assuming positive intent in others, and operating from that platform, it just makes sustainability a lot more realistic. Demonstrating integrity and accountability, again, this goes back to our character, demonstrating that and being very open about the importance of that in the way we lead and the way we talk to other people becomes very important. Mark the progress of the mission, because it's not just about having a theory around it, but it's to be successful. Are we reaching our objectives? Are we getting there? And along those lines, approaching everything that we do with what I would call confident humility. And when you think about servant leadership, that concept, it's really this theme coming together, confident humility. And on the surface, it seems like two opposite things, right? They don't go together. It's almost like an oxymoron. How do you get confidence and humility to coexist? And to me, that's at the core of what a servant leader is all about. So let me try to break that down this way. When you think about confident humility, how does that come from? What gives rise to it? On the one hand, the confidence piece, that's the easier part to understand. Confidence comes from competence. Think of the top of the tree, right? You're good at what you do. You're skilled. You're smart. You're hardworking. So you have confidence because you have a track record of accomplishment. And confidence can flow from that. And the best way to get there is to be really good at what you do. Just get really good at what you do. Work on your craft. Get better at it. As a student now, work on that. Eventually, you graduate, you move on to a professional setting, be really good at that. Every profession has some way to climb a ladder or to advance. And so learn how the rules work and how can you get better at that? How can you demonstrate your capacity to move forward? So confidence comes from that, just repetition and being good at what you do. Humility, on the other hand, is a little harder because I believe humility comes from being secure, from knowing your value and knowing your worth, knowing who you are, being secure in what you do and being very secure in who you are. And, you know, the idea of constant leadership has always been around for a long time. One of the most iconic examples of servant leadership is the visual of Jesus washing his disciples' feet, right? That's servant leadership, how meek, how humble. And it's true. But if you were to read the passages before that event, that moment, what happens before that, you'll read that Jesus prayed. And he prayed, and he said literally three things before that moment. He says, I'll make it simple, but he says basically said, look, I know where I came from. Secondly, I know who I am. And thirdly, I know where I'm going. And the next thing he does is he washes his disciples' feet. So think about the implications of that. If I know who I am, if I know where I came from, if I know where I'm going, serving you doesn't diminish me. Serving you doesn't lessen me. If I'm confident in where I came from, and let me tell you, I work hard at not forgetting where I came from. You know, I came here with nothing. I came to this country not even knowing English. Very humble beginnings. Wow. So I never allow myself to get beyond forgetting where I came from. I'm grounded in that. Matter of fact, living in San Diego, as much as God has blessed us with a beautiful home, I still see at night the lights from Mexico. It's literally that close. I always take a moment to just look at the lights and A, be thankful, recognize that that's where I started, and a reminder to myself and hopefully to you this morning that where you came from doesn't dictate where you go, that your past doesn't have to be a predictor of your future, especially if your upbringing or your circumstances were not perfect. That doesn't have to define you. You have a chance to do something different and to change the trajectory. And so if you know where you came from, if you know where you're at, if you know where you're going, that creates confident humility. And I would tell you, eventually, and some of you right now, some of you already have leadership roles right now. Right, you're the president of a chapter of this, or you lead the team in something, or you have some role within an organization or a club at on campus. And so as you begin to take on leadership roles, you'll find that being a servant leader always takes you farther. When you make it more about the team than you, when you make sure that you elevate them, and these are principles that are informed by faith. And so I've learned that these principles work in business. It wasn't just a religious thing. It wasn't just a faith thing. It wasn't just a church thing. They work in life and they work in leadership. And the last thing that I'll share and I'll come to a close is really understanding that life can be tough and business can be tough. And you're going to face challenges in life that will shake you to your core. You're going to come through gut-wrenching decisions at some point. And as a leader, when you make it less about you and your role and more about the people that are under your responsibility, when you think about the responsibility you have to them, those decisions can be very difficult. And the third thing that I've learned in this journey of converging faith and business is the importance of being anchored and connected to something that doesn't move. And so as a business leader, in my career of the last 30 years, there's been difficult choices, difficult moments, difficult conversations, difficult decisions. And sometimes they'll rock you. Like, it's tough. Like, you really have a hard time conceptualizing the implications, the ramifications of your decision and how it impacts people. You could imagine as we went through COVID, all of you experienced it in your own way, but think of us as a leadership team for our firm with 17,000 employees trying to decide, what do we do? How do we handle it? What rules do we put in place? Do we let people go? And I'm proud to say that when those moments came back to a decision for the few of us in the executive leadership that lead the 17,000 firm employee organization, as we sat around the table as a leadership team and we looked at each other, and when we didn't know what to do, when we weren't sure what to do, you know what we did? We went back to the values of our firm. When it wasn't obvious, what do? And as a firm, we have five values that we live by: respect, integrity, teamwork, excellence, and stewardship. Those are our firm's values. And when we honestly didn't know, because again, no one had done through COVID, right? Well, there was no playbook to follow. Other firms were doing other things. And we saw other firms, you know, cutting workforce and doing different things, cutting compensation. We're like, what do we do? And when we honestly didn't know what to do, we went back to our values. We were anchored in something that didn't move. And it was those decisions that allowed us to say, you know what? We're not going to cut our workforce. We're not going to cut compensation. We believe in our firm. We believe in our people. We believe in our mission. We're going to stay true. It wasn't popular and it wasn't easy. But when you don't know what to, when you honestly don't know what to do, it's good to have something underneath you that doesn't move. And I found this picture a few years ago. Actually, I used this during COVID in our firm as we had some discussions. And this is a cool little boat anchored in one of the inlets off of Alaska. And what I liked about this picture is that it looks like a beautiful day, right? By the way, I saw the forecast today was going to be 30 and sunny. I'm like, those two things don't go together. Because sunny for me, it's like 70, right? 30 is like, how does that happen? This looks like a nice, cool, nice day in Alaska. But the context of this picture is that there was a huge storm coming. The next day, there was going to be a huge storm coming into that spot. And what I like about the picture is you see this boat, it's got these ropes connected to the sides. And it's got this anchor in the front. And so the storm will come. And in your life, in your profession, in your career, you're going to face storms. We all do. It's part of life, part of the weather. And the preparation, the anticipation that when the storm comes, this boat is connected and anchored means that it might get battered, it'll get wet, but it's not going to stray far. And one of the things that I've seen in business and with business professionals is that if you're not anchored to something, if you're not tethered to something that doesn't move, you're going to float away. And before you know it, you don't even know who you are. You don't even know what you stand for. You don't know what you believe in. And if you allow the storms of life to carry you away, in the process, you lose yourself. And so I have found in my own life that being anchored to something that doesn't move. And to me, that's why faith is important. Being anchored to something that's steady, that's stable, that's predictable. You know, I might get tossed around. I might get battered a little bit, but I'm not going to stray far from a foundation that works well. And so my encouragement to you this morning, as you pursue success, as you pursue your careers, as you dream about the future, don't lose sight of the importance of being anchored to something, whatever that is for you. Don't lose yourself in the process. What good would it do you to be very successful, quote unquote, and in the process you lose you? You're not you anymore. The people that love you and cared for you don't recognize who you've become. Success can do that to you. And so being anchored to something, being grounded in something that doesn't move, something that keeps you connected. And I will tell you, the relationships you can form right now with your fellow students are hugely valuable. There's some great people in this room. Some of you haven't met each other yet. There's some great people here. And I would think part of the reason why you chose to be at an institution like Gonzaga is because some of this is already in you. And so connecting with like-minded people, I have found, you know, in my career that I connect with people of faith in a different way. We can talk differently. We can relate differently. And it really has been a blessing along the journey to find people of faith in leadership roles that we can connect, that we can talk about and challenge each other to a greater purpose. Let's go beyond the spreadsheet. Let's go beyond the bottom line. Are we doing the right thing? You know, there's a sort of a churchy religious word, righteousness. People are like, what is that? Very simple. Righteousness simply means do the right thing for the right reason. Those principles apply universally. And so I would encourage you, as you pursue your goals, as you pursue your future, as you begin to define what success might look like down the road, don't lose yourself in the process. Be anchored to something good, something that doesn't move, something that holds you steady. Because problems will come, challenges will come, tough decisions will come. And when that comes, being anchored to something that's foundational and strong will really give you the strength to move forward and to lead with confidence in a way that's not just about you, but it's really about the mission and the greater good. So with that, that's what I have for you this morning.
Thank you for listening to the G Suite Podcast. This episode was produced and hosted by Andrew Brasich and edited by Jack Talbot. To find more G Suite and many other podcasts on the Gonzaga Podcast Network, remember to check out gonzaga.edu/podcasts. Thanks again.